from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum in our opening hour this morning, nurses get more back and arm injuries than construction workers, yet hospital officials have done little to reduce such injuries despite knowing how to prevent them. That's according to an NPR investigation led by correspondent Daniel Zwerdling. He'll join us to discuss his findings, how California hospitals are doing, and why he calls nursing one of the most dangerous jobs in America. Forum is next, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. NPR's Daniel Zwerdling led an investigation which has revealed that nursing is physically one of this nation's most dangerous jobs. Debilitating back, shoulder, arm, and other bodily injuries occur in nursing work at three times the rate of construction work, mostly from lifting and moving patients around. And many of the costs of those injuries are passed on to hospital patients and, it turns out, are also unnecessary. In this morning's opening Forum Hour, we welcome NPR's Daniel Zwerdling, whose series Injured Nurses begins today on All Things Considered and includes Loma Linda Hospital as well as VA hospitals in Kaiser Walnut Creek. And Daniel Zwerdling, good to have you. Welcome.
Hey, Michael. Thanks for having me back.
Glad to have you back, and also interested in letting listeners know that we're going to be talking about Kaiser here in Walnut Creek, which is in your series, and we requested that Kaiser Permanente's Northern California offices join our show this morning, but they were unable to provide us with a representative for this program, and we'll get to what Daniel found out actually going to visit that facility and talking to people who are official there. Let's begin, though, Daniel, by talking about just how risky a business this is. I mean, you have all these musculoskeletal injuries and about 35,000 other injuries among staff, orderlies, and so forth, 90% of which are women. And what we're talking about is not only three times construction worker injuries, but also more injuries in number than, well, police and firefighters even.
You know, the more I got into this topic, the more astonished I was. I mean, this is almost like a hidden epidemic that's all around us and our family members, but we don't see. I mean, imagine going to the hospital. You're a patient there. Your family members are a patient. You know, maybe you're getting great care on the patient side of the curtain. But if you peek behind the employee's side of the curtain, you see these amazing injuries. And initially, when I first saw the Bureau of Labor Statistics data showing these high rates you've been talking about of these back and arm and other injuries, I thought, all right, so nursing staff, you know, they sprain their back for a day, they take some ibuprofen, they come back to work a day later. I was amazed. I talked to men and women who can no longer lift their children because they're so injured. They showed me x-rays of, you know, these huge metal plates and sharp screws around their spines because of the back injuries. They went through months and months and months where they couldn't even brush their hair because of their arm injuries. And many people end up having to quit the profession.
Yeah, there is in your report people who can't lift a glass of water, people who one woman, her husband was saying her cognitive abilities have been affected. I mean, we're talking about really
because of all the pain medication.
Yeah, exactly. So we're talking about long-term injuries and the effects of medication and all of that in the package. And the fact is hospitals are paying these medical bills, paying workman's comp, and a lot of those costs wind up in patient bills.
And we tried really hard to find out how much you're paying when you go to the hospital in your bill, and we could not. Workers' compensation, this is amazing. I mean, there are, you know, billions of dollars paid every year in workers' compensation to injured employees. I'm not just talking about nursing staff. I'm talking about everybody. There's very little good public records that show the extent of this problem. But what I could find out was that the insurance industry, and I talked to executives of the insurance industry, they said that paying workers' compensation to hospital employees as a result of injuries, that the single biggest cause is these injuries caused by moving and lifting patients. Some people have estimated that $500 million a year. Anyway, I couldn't find a good figure. But the point is, when you go to a hospital, and I asked hospital executives about this, I said, look, if you're paying a lot of money every year in workers' compensation to injured workers, in replacement costs for staff who are filling in for those injured workers, are we paying for this? And they said, oh, yeah, of course you're paying for it. You know, you, the patients pay for everything one way or another.
And these same officials that you spoke to have known how to reduce the injuries but haven't done so. We're talking about mechanical, mobile kinds of things, which some places like the VA hospitals have instituted, right?
Want to hear something amazing? We found a nursing textbook from 1898. You didn't hear that wrong. 1898, and it shows a machine, a big machine, in which they are lifting a patient, sort of like a factory would lift heavy parts. And decades ago, companies started making these lifts. And some, you mentioned the Department of Veterans Affairs. This is quite astonishing. In the late 90s, a medical director at one of their hospitals said to his staff, why are so many of our nursing staff getting these back injuries? What's going on? So they started studying it. They actually had researchers observe nursing assistants and registered nurses and others as they went about their jobs every day. And they found out that it was the moving and lifting that was causing most of these injuries. And so about 8 years ago, maybe a little more recently, the Department of Veterans Affairs said, look, this is really important. We're spending more than $20 million a year nationwide on these injuries. And that's a conservative estimate. So the Department of Veterans Affairs said, we're gonna drastically reduce the rate. And so they have spent more than $200 million buying these machines. And I went to the VA hospital in Loma Linda in Southern California. They, in every single patient room, Michael, if you were a patient there, when it's time to put you into a wheelchair or take you to the shower or just get you out in the hallway moving, they would have a ceiling hoist. You know, they would wrap a canvas, you know, cocoon around you and lift you in the ceiling hoist. And they have reduced, you know, their rate of injuries dramatically. The VA has reduced them nationwide by about 40%. And I talked at length with a chain of hospitals in Florida called Baptist Health. They say they've reduced their rate of injuries by 80%. And I sent their figures to well-known researchers around the country and said, do you believe this? And people said, well, their statistics look really good. You know, it looks like they've really done it. And they did it again by buying lots of equipment to move and lift patients. And also, this is a key point, they constantly train the staff how to use that equipment and remind them to use the equipment. The staff training is very important.
Daniel Zwerdling with us, correspondent for NPR's investigation unit, and he led the investigation in nursing industries, injuries, which include coverage of some California hospitals you just mentioned. The VA at Loma Linda, on the other hand, by contrast, you went to North Carolina and they were insisting that all these back and muscle injuries were not the result of jobs. And it seems almost hard to believe that they would take that position.
That's right. I went to a major hospital in the South and they have a record. I talked with staff. I got internal documents. There were a bunch of court cases that for years they have a pattern of saying to injured employees, including nurses who get these lifting injuries, you didn't get injured by lifting patients, so we're not going to pay workers' compensation or your medical bills. And so the big question is why, right? Or let's step back. Let's ask another big question. So if hospitals have known for years that you can buy these machines and you can train the staff and reduce your rate of injuries by 40 to 80%. Why aren't most hospitals doing it? And I say most hospitals are not doing it because everybody I interviewed, hospital researchers, executives at hospitals, the chief lobbyist for the American Hospital Association, which represents almost all the hospitals around the country, everybody said most hospitals are still not aggressively dealing with this issue. So the question is why? And I found out it's a combination of reasons. First of all, if you put yourself in the mindset of a hospital administrator, think of all the pressing financial priorities you have to juggle. You have to get better infection control. You know, I think you've even had stories on your program about rates of hospital infections are increasing. And the federal government won't reimburse hospitals for any patient who gets the infection while they're there. Number two, everybody's got to go to computerized medical records in hospitals. This is a national law that says this, and this is costing, you know, a single hospital company might pay tens of millions of dollars doing this for their hospital chain. Doctors are always coming to you saying, there's a new laser scanner, you know, we've got to get it. We can treat our patients better, right? And you and I and our loved ones would like them to get that scanner, right? So when you're so you have all these things you have to juggle. Added to that is the fact that in recent years, the hospital industry has gone through all kinds of upheavals. A lot of hospitals have shut down. Other hospitals are gobbling up those troubled hospitals to try to get, you know, better economies of scale. And in this climate, people say, so where do nurses' injuries fit? Well, it turns out that traditionally, the nursing staff in hospitals have been pretty far down the hierarchy. And I've, you know, hospital executives may disagree with you and say, oh, no, you know, our nursing staff is our most prized possession. But the fact is, and there are many, you know, examples that show this, the nursing staff is often the first to go. You know, hospital layoffs, nursing staff, nursing assistants, orderlies. And so when it comes time to make that decision, how are we going to spend our, you know, that $1 million next year? Folks in hospitals said, well, very few say, let's protect the nursing staff from hurting their backs.
So in effect, Annie, you got an epidemic. Hospital executives know. And the fact of the matter is they're not doing anything to ameliorate it. And it's certainly disturbing to think about this on any level. But they could use these mechanical lifts. And in so many instances, they don't. But I'm also struck by something else here. And this goes back to the fact that over a century, nursing schools have been teaching lifting and moving patients with the use of proper body mechanics, and lab studies show that this is deleterious. It's dangerous, too.
This was also really striking. So if you're in nursing school, and we call nursing schools around the country, or when you go to a hospital, they give you training, and they tell you, okay, here's how we do the work here. And the standard way to teach nursing staff how to move and lift patients is something called body mechanics. The phrase is proper body mechanics, good body mechanics. You know, Google it. You'll find all kinds of textbooks that talk about it. And what it basically says is, you know, everything that all of us should use when we carry out the garbage. Keep your back straight, bend your knees, you know, that sort of thing. But some years ago, and this is going back to the late 1990s, some state officials from Washington went to Ohio State University, the Ohio State University in Columbus, Ohio. They have something called the Spine Research Institute that has done really landmark studies looking at how automobile factory workers, grocery store checkout clerks, and others, how they injure their backs and what are ways to prevent them from injuring their backs. And these folks from Washington State went to this lab and they said, could you please study nursing staff? Because we've been seeing a lot of nursing staff in Washington getting injured, and we got to figure out why is it happening and what to do about it. So this laboratory that, you know, is more used to studying auto workers brought in a bunch of nursing staff, and they wired them up to something called the lumbar motion monitor. They invented an artificial spine with all these sensors that you strap on somebody, and it shows you the kinds of forces that are being exerted at different points inside your body. It's pretty amazing. They put it on me, and I saw myself on this big TV screen moving like an animated skeleton. It was my skeleton showing in red and in blue the forces pulsing down and along my spine. Anyway, the Spine Research Institute found, this is their conclusion, there is no safe way that a human can safely lift a patient. And they concluded that the forces on the backs of nursing staff when they're trying to help you up in bed, get you into a wheelchair, that those forces are far greater than anything they've studied in auto workers on an assembly line.
Well, we should mention that auto workers can't lift over 35 pounds to protect their backs. You've got nurses lifting, as you point out in your excellent investigative work, got a couple of nurses lifting a guy who's 300 pounds, for example, and this sort of thing is going on. I'm also struck by the fact that there are CDC guidelines on safe patient handling, notwithstanding what you just said about the fact that those guidelines may be simply off the mark. But we have more obesity now. We have about 70% of hospital patients, by rough calculation, who are obese. Americans rising in
obesity. Overweight.
Or overweight, right?
Or overweight,
those
right.
Numbers rising in our nation. And also, what is also rising, is aging workforce and people staying longer in hospitals.
That's right. And there have been studies showing that the more fatigued, that the older and more fatigued a nurse is, or and when I say nurse, by the way, Michael, I mean all the people who do nursing tasks, including the patient techs, the orderlies, the nursing assistants.
And forgive me, we're also talking about nursing homes and facilities for the elderly and so forth, yeah?
The rate of injuries among nursing staff in nursing homes is even greater than in hospitals.
Right.
And we decided just to, you know, for the sake of the series, to focus on one place that all of us can relate to now. And so we decided on hospitals. But, you know, studies have shown that the more fatigued the staff is, the older they are, the more prone they are to these injuries. And there's an interesting scientific explanation why. It turns out that the more your spine is affected by these forces, there are little tears that show up in something called end plates. And these are tiny films. They're about the thickness of a credit card. They're above and below each disc. And the more you get stressed lifting and moving patients or whatever, you know, working on an assembly line, if it's designed the wrong way, the more micro tears you get in these end plates, the more scar tissue forms. And the more scar tissue that forms, the more it blocks the flow of nutrients into the discs that the discs need to stay healthy. So the discs start to deteriorate. Now, many nursing staff said to me, you know, I can remember the exact moment I got my injury, which ended my career. But William Maris, the guy who runs the Spine Research Institute that I was telling you about at The Ohio State University, he says, actually, there's seldom one moment where you injure your back. The moment you go, ah, and you can't move, that's the straw that broke the camel's back. You know, but you were getting stressed for weeks or months or years before that. And that's one reason why older workers tend to get these injuries more often. You know, you mentioned Kaiser at the beginning. And can we talk about the Kaiser's hospital in Walnut Creek
for
a moment? Yeah,
sure. You went to Walnut Creek.
You know, Kaiser, because I started off by talking about, you know, how this is like a hidden epidemic all around us, and you go into the hospital and, you know, maybe you get great patient care. Kaiser, of course, has won all kinds of awards for its patient care. But it turns out that a group of nursing staff at one hospital, the Kaiser Permanente Hospital in Walnut Creek, near you guys, they were having so many injuries, and they felt that their managers were doing so little to work with them on preventing them, that they finally went to the state government. They went to Cal OSHA and filed a complaint. And I decided to look into Kaiser in great detail, not because there is any evidence that Kaiser has more nursing staff injuries than any other. In fact, there's no good source of data nationally on what hospitals have what rate of injuries. So it's really impossible to compare, you never say it's impossible, right, Michael? As journalists, it's really difficult. We couldn't figure out a way to compare one hospital anywhere in the country with a hospital in another part of the country in terms of how many injuries they get. Okay, but the reason we decided to look into Kaiser is because, number one, these members of the nursing staff called the state and said, we need help. Number two, I was able to get through Freedom of Information Act requests internal documents from Kaiser that actually show things like, you know, patients who came to the staff clinic saying, I just got injured lifting a patient. And what we found was the nursing staff said, we want you to understand something, that yes, we, as nursing staff, we hook patients up to IVs, we monitor their condition, we clean them. But what most people don't realize is that nursing is an incredibly grueling profession. And as you mentioned a few minutes ago, the population is getting bigger and heavier. And so the nursing staff said, you need to see what we do every day to understand why we keep getting injured. And I want to play.
I was just going to say, you know, we do have a clip here from Ashley Moore, one of the nurses that you spoke with. And maybe you can explain her situation, and then we'll hear the clip.
She's in her early 30s. She has been working in the ICU. She's a big Kaiser booster, by the way. Her father and other members of her family have held important positions at Kaiser hospitals. She says, you know, she herself thinks they give great patient care, but, this is a big but, she says when it came to injuries, the management at Kaiser Permanente Walnut Creek just wasn't doing much. And here she's explaining how every day, every hour, a typical nurse or nursing assistant, they try to help patients get out of bed, and this is the kind of forces that are, being applied to their backs.
Let's hear.
But they can't quite get themselves swung over to the edge of the bed, so what we do is we put our arm out, and the patient latches onto your arm and then just pulls, and then we almost do a dance, you know, at walking over to the chair, and the next thing you know, their light's on. 20 minutes later, I want to get up. I want to go back to bed.
How many times by the end of the day have you handled a person who can't move very well on their own?
15 to 20 times. With your own body, move them.
Well, there it is. And
Michael,
in fact,
can I give you a little quiz?
I'm hesitant to say yes. Go ahead.
Okay. But say yes. Do it. Okay. If I'm a 250 pound patient, how much does my leg weigh? So when you're Ashley Moore and you're coming in to help me get out of bed and you're going to lift my leg to the edge, how much does my leg weigh? 250 pounds.
Yeah, I'm trying to think.
Okay, time's up.
Yeah, okay, go ahead.
Around 50 pounds. And if I'm
really
300, if I'm a 300 pound patient, which is very common now in hospitals, it's my leg can easily weigh 60 pounds. Oh. So think of those auto workers we were talking about earlier who aren't supposed to lift more than 35 pounds. And now you're a nurse coming in, you know, maybe you might a man or a woman, whoever. Although the vast majority are women, and now you have to lift a 60-pound leg and you do it all day long.
I didn't realize that one leg of even 200 pounds could be weighing in at that weight. I'm just interested, though, in the fact that I alluded before to a 300-pound guy who, I guess, had an attack of diarrhea, and the nurse knew that she had to get a team there. And this was at Walnut Creek, too, wasn't it, where only one other person appeared instead of a team, and so these two women were essentially engaged in having to lift this guy?
It was. This nurse, Lisa Evans, was attending to a patient with congestive heart failure. As you say, he was around 300 pounds. Suddenly he calls out, I need help, because he knew he was about to have diarrhea. So she called, and this is at Kaiser Walnut Creek, and this gets to a point. This is one of the things that the staff kept complaining about. On paper, Kaiser had a plan to prevent nurse injuries. And on paper, it looked pretty good. They said, you know, we have equipment around the hospital to help move and lift patients. We have teams of patient care technicians who are there to help the nursing staff lift and move patients. The problem was when the staff needed it, they kept finding they couldn't find the machines, or they couldn't get hold of patient care technicians when they needed them. So on this particular day, the nurse, Lisa Evans, calls the dispatcher and says, we need a lift team. We got a 300-pound patient. We need them in a hurry. And who shows up? One woman shows up to help her. Now, I hope everybody can tune in tonight to hear Lisa Evans tell what happened, because it's one of the most amazing. I mean, she takes you right there to the bed and shows better than anybody has ever showed us before exactly what a nurse or nursing assistant does, you know, day in and day out, hour in and hour out. It's quite amazing. And she got a back injury, which helped end her career.
And I should mention, by the way, you can hear the series, which begins today on All Things Considered and runs every Wednesday this month. Reports will also be published online at npr.org and will air on All Things Considered. In the meantime, you can join us. We welcome you, nurses, and anybody else who has concern about this or wants to ask questions or bring perhaps your own experiences to bear. Join us on the program. Our toll-free number is available now. It's 866-733-6786. Again, we welcome your calls. 866-733-6786 is the number to join us, or email us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, kqed.org/forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Back and arm injuries than construction workers, yet hospital officials have done little to reduce such injuries, despite knowing how to prevent them. That's according to an NPR investigation led by correspondent Daniel Zwerdling, who is with us for the hour. And you can actually hear this series beginning today on All Things Considered on National Public Radio and right here on KQED. Again, part of the study includes Kaiser Walnut Creek, and we requested that Kaiser Permanente's Northern California offices join our show this morning, but they were unable to provide us with a representative for the program. Danny, you had the chance to talk to Kaiser, though. Can you talk about what their response was before we hear a clip about that discussion you had?
Yes. The first thing that struck me is I said, you know, I would like a tour of the hospital at Walnut Creek. This is the hospital that we were talking about before the break, where so many nursing staff said they were getting injured, and they finally called in the state to investigate. Oh, and incidentally, I forgot to say, this is very important, the state, Cal OSHA, sent an investigator to Kaiser at Walnut Creek. He met with many employees. One day he came to the cafeteria at lunchtime. Another day he was in the courtyard. And, you know, people lined up literally, to tell them how they got hurt. And the state concluded, yeah, you know, Kaiser, you're not doing what you need to protect the staff. And as a result of a negotiated agreement, the state administrative law judge issued an order saying, you know, basically that the nurses were right. The Kaiser had not provided the equipment that nurses could get to easily to move and lift patients. They hadn't trained staff properly, and Kaiser promised to fix those problems. Anyway, so but the nursing staff I was talking to at the hospital, and I went for two visits. They said, well, things are a little better since the state administrative law judge issued the order a year ago, but they haven't changed all that much. And so I said to Kaiser, you know, please take me on a tour so I can actually see, I can watch the staff, how they move and lift patients. And Kaiser said, no, we will not take you on a tour. Why? Well, they said it was because of protecting patient confidentiality. But I want to stress that I talked to several other hospitals who have aggressively been dealing with them, protecting nurses. They were, you know, dying for me to come visit and tour the hospitals. And I did tour a couple of them. And there was no problem with patient confidentiality. They simply, you know, had a member of the communications department go up to patients and say, hey, this guy from NPR would like to talk to you and watch what we're doing. Is that okay? You know, and almost everybody said, sure. But I did meet with the workplace safety executive in a conference room. And she said, look, whatever happened at Walnut Creek, we're committed at Kaiser to protecting our employees. We think nursing employees are among, you know, our most valuable staff. And here's a clip of Helen Archer-Duste. She is executive director for Northern California, Kaiser Permanente, overseeing workplace safety.
Kaiser Permanente as an employer is deeply committed to the safety of our employees, including our registered nurses. We care about our registered nurses, and we honor and appreciate everything they do day in and day out to care for our patients. We want them and our patients to be safe.
Do you feel that there were more injuries among the nursing staff here at Kaiser Walnut Creek than there should have been?
In that any injury is preventable, we don't want our employees to be injured on the job. Walnut Creek did not have an injury rate that's higher than any of our other facilities. In fact, they're in the average level, and we have reduced those injuries an additional 23%. Our goal is to have no one injured on the job, and that rate is dropping every month, every year.
Okay. Danny, I've got a email here that I have to read right away. Joe writes, Kaiser Walnut Creek has detailed and robust protocols and uses teamwork, Hoyer lifts, air pals, and whatever is required to prevent injuries. One problem is that nurses often don't help one another. Your guest describes breaches of protocols by nurses, technicians, and staff leading to injuries that are directly related to a culture of not my patient that is a result of union erosion of nurses' professionalism.
Walnut Creek, I know, has been embroiled, like some of the other Kaiser hospitals, in union and management negotiations and battles. And perhaps Joe is writing from that perspective. It is true that, for example, at the VA hospital I mentioned in Southern California that I visited, where they've installed ceiling lifts in 100% of the patient rooms, the head of their nurse protection program, a really dynamic woman named Toni Hilton, told me that when she first came to the hospital to run the program to protect nurses, that she found that they had a lot of equipment already and that many of the nursing staff were not using them, and that she had to, you know, change the culture in the hospital. Because she said, you know, look, you can't just blame management. The staff has some responsibility too. But let's get back to Kaiser for a moment. Based on all the documents we got and all the many, many interviews we did with staff there, and not just registered nurses, by the way, patient techs, nursing assistants, and others, we heard that over and over again that the equipment was not available when the nursing staff needed it. It was down, way down a hallway in a closet behind cleaning equipment, or, you know, the battery was dead. Let me just play, you have another clip there. This is Ashley Moore again. She's the young nurse in the ICU. She talked about how whenever they would need these patient lifting teams, for example, they couldn't find them. This is Ashley Moore.
Every day you call and say, we don't have anybody to help us. And again, it would be the same thing. Every single day being jerked around. And by the end of the day, nobody ever came to help us.
And again, I heard that same story over and over and over again from registered nurses, nursing assistants, and others.
What happened to the 2012 law, though, in California? They're only one of nine states that's supposed to protect staff from getting hurt and lifting patients.
Well, whether they're one of 10 states that specifically, yeah, so a handful of states, well, bigger than a handful, around a dozen states have passed laws that in some way try to protect nursing staff from getting hurt by lifting and injuring patients. Some of these laws apply specifically to nursing homes, and some of them specifically mention hospitals, including California. So California's law came into effect just before the nursing staff called the state, the nursing staff at Kaiser, Walnut Creek, and said, we need help. And it was that law, in part, that inspired the nursing staff to say, wait a minute, you know, we should... They didn't know where to get help. They've tried to talk to the, you know, they tried to get the management to help. The management, they felt, wasn't responding. So that when the law went into effect in early 2012, some members of the nursing staff said, so let's call in the state. Now, it turned out that the law was not yet fully in effect in the sense that Cal/OSHA hadn't yet written the rulemaking. So the state came in under a more general law, and that's how the state ended up investigating Kaiser and issuing this order that they had to fix their problems. But these dozen, roughly dozen states now that have passed laws dealing with hospitals and nursing homes, this could potentially go a long way toward ameliorating, not solving, but ameliorating the problem of injuries. I say it could go a long way because we've looked in detail at those laws, and many of them do not have much enforcement power. There aren't many teeth, you know, so there's really no punishment for a hospital who does not follow it.
Well, what about national legislation?
You know, this is really interesting. Back in 2000, one of the last acts of the Congress during the Clinton administration, I'm sorry, not by Congress, one of the last acts by the administration, was that OSHA, the Federal Occupational Safety and Health Administration, put out a rule covering all industry, including hospitals. They specifically mentioned hospitals, but it covered all industry. And it said, we got to protect our workers from ergonomic injuries, you know, repetitive lifting, repetitive motions. And, you know, this repetitive lifting that nursing staff does is very much an ergonomic injury. And the rules, you know, had some really tough facets to it, which is that, you know, hospitals had to very carefully track these kinds of injuries. Hospitals had to educate all the workers that you have the right to be protected. And if you get injured, you have to get workers' compensation and medical expenses and, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And OSHA put out this rule at the end of 2000, which would have affected every hospital in the country. And one of the first things the new Congress did after President Bush took office was to kill that rule. And ever since then, every few years, Congress members, congressional members introduced legislation that would try to do it with a national law from Congress. And every time they introduce it, that law withers. The American Hospital Association and other hospital lobbies have always lobbied against these proposals.
And
they say...
Go ahead. No, go ahead. I just was going to mention that I believe you talked to Carla Lugieri, who is the chief lobbyist for the American hospitals throughout the United States. And I think you asked her quite blank, you know, you think this is a most important issue we have to look at? And she simply said, no, I don't. Right.
Yeah, she said, yeah, she said to the extent that, you know, we want to keep our workers safe. Yes, this is important, but no, I don't think it's one of the most important issues. Now, the hospital industry, though, says, look, we're all for safe patient handling. You know, we're all for nursing staff handling, moving and lifting patients safely. But then they find details in the specific proposal, whether it's a proposal in Congress or a proposal last year in the Oregon legislature, or there was one last year in the Massachusetts legislature. There's always something wrong with the fine print that the hospital industry says, you know, means it won't support that bill.
Talking with Daniel Zwerdling, who is correspondent with NPR's Investigation Unit and led the investigation in the nursing industries. And you can hear that on All Things Considered this afternoon. And you can also find it online at npr.org. It will air, though, this afternoon and then be available online. The series is called Injured Nurses and will appear Wednesdays on All Things Considered. Lots of calls, and let's go to them. Jean, hi, you're on.
Hi, this is Jean from the San Francisco Bay Area, and I'm just thrilled that you're discussing this subject on forum. I've been a nurse for 17 years and have watched many colleagues lose their careers because of back injuries. And I've worked at a large university teaching hospital in the Bay Area where there's lift equipment installed in some rooms, but not it's not standardized throughout the hospital. And one of the issues was the training was not standardized either, and it was very sort of sporadic. And the space in the room, it's great to have the equipment, but if you don't have the space in the room to use the equipment, it's pretty much useless. And, you know, we're seeing patients up to 700 pounds.
Wow,
700
pounds. And a nurse may weigh about 125 pounds. Yeah. So it's a real challenging situation.
That's putting it mildly. Yeah, thank you for your call. Actually, I'm looking at an email here. I want to go to more calls. But Judy writes, what surprises me, having been a nursing student as well as having been a paramedic, is I would think both ambulance personnel as well as firefighters would have far more issues on an ambulance. Nearly every patient interaction involved lifting, including lifting patients as heavy on a heavy ambulance gurney to get them transported. Yeah, those first responders also have the same problem, don't they, Danny?
Yes, and I didn't look into them in detail, but the Bureau of Labor Statistics data suggests that they have pretty high rates of injuries, too. And the hospitals I visited, for example, the Loma Linda Hospital, the VA hospital, they said that our EMT folks have a lot of problems, and they've spent a lot of time trying to figure out the best equipment for them to use to get people out of the ambulance, put them in the ambulance, and that sort of thing.
And here's Peter, who writes, lifting patients is not safe for the patient either. My mother had Alzheimer's and was in a nursing home for 5 years. She had her shoulder separated by nursing staff pulling her up out of her chair by her arms. They were never able to fix it, and she lived with the pain constantly for the rest of her life. We need a better way to handle this. Let me go to another caller. That's you, Daniel. Join us. Hi.
Good morning. Thanks so much for calling attention to this situation. My wife's an RN for Kaiser, has been for about 10 years, and I hear these stories all the time. Whenever some help is needed, if a patient needs to be bathed or something, it's very hard to get help. This is when she doesn't take breaks or take lunch, and she really feels like she's expendable.
That's sad to hear, but Daniel, I'm glad you called in with that, and I thank you. I want to, in fact, go right to another caller because I want to get to as many of you in as I can, and Annika has her own personal testimony here. Annika, hi.
Hi. I was a bedside nurse for 6 years at a teaching hospital here in the Bay Area, and I left to go back to school a few years ago, and one of the big reasons was because I kept on seeing my colleagues getting injured, and, you know, every day you're worried that you are going to get injured on the job. There is equipment, but everything's happening in real time, so it's often a matter of having adequate staffing to have someone to help you right away if someone needs to go to the bathroom. Well, you know, there's a million other things going on in other patients that have needs. And one of the other things that that I'd like to bring up is that you have, if the older nurses are the ones getting injured, these are the people who are the experts, right, who are the ones teaching other staff and who know everything about the hospital and know the best how to care for patients, and they're the ones who are getting hit hardest. So if we lose those nurses, it has a huge impact on the hospital and on care for patients.
Yes, I thank you. Danny?
You know, I got chills, actually. Thank you, Annika, and the others for calling. I got chills because here's this big national problem that's changing people's lives, and we've hardly heard about it, you know. But every time I went to a dinner with some and met some people, and somebody said, "Hey, what are you working on at NPR?" and I mentioned this project, almost everybody would say, "Oh my God, I can't believe it! I have a neighbor / cousin / sister, you know, whatever, who's a nurse who was off for 4 months, 6 months, a year, because of an injury." I mean, clearly it's not everybody, but, you know, this is affecting huge numbers of people's lives. And I just want to add that Daniel called in, the husband of a nurse. one of the most compelling moments in the series, I think, is the story that's going to be on in a couple weeks about this major hospital in the South, where the officials were telling the nursing staff, "You weren't injured on the job, you know, so we're not responsible for your problem." At the end of the story, a nurse's husband breaks down, sobbing. I mean, this is a guy who rides Harley Davidsons. He starts sobbing, saying the day she got injured lifting that patient has changed the rest of our lives. I mean, it's just it's really, I get teary every time I hear it.
And let's not forget the human side of this. And I think your series, and again, kudos to you on that, really brings it to light. And it's coming to light in some of the responses we're getting here. Also, well, as you might imagine, anger at different targets. Frank writes, "While nurses are taking a beating on the front line, some nonprofit hospital CEOs are raking in millions of dollars in salary, and most, it seems, are giving themselves huge pay hikes." Here's Cecile, who responds to another listener email that I read on air. She says, "Nurses don't help one another. What a statement. One of the big issues around safety is the modern staffing pattern, or the understaffing pattern, decided on by administrators opposed to union protections." And here's Antonio, who says, "Just to give a bit of perspective, we tried to provide home hospice care for both of my parents at the end of their lives, and the results were really quite difficult, largely because of the issues around lifting our parents as they grew weaker. My father, who was the largest man at 200 pounds, was far too heavy for my 120-pound sister and a nurse's aide to manage at home. And when we moved them to a proper hospice, it was obvious that even the nurses had difficulty with this normal-sized man." So several listeners are kind of asking here, Daniel, what about patient injuries due to inadequate lifting ability on the part of the nursing staff? Do we have any numbers on that?
No, and I tried to get them. Researchers have tried to look at, you know, what is the relationship between these nurse injuries and patient injuries. And there's a piece of data missing there. You know, in terms of your intuition and just logic, right? You would think that if a nurse is prone to getting injured, then that's going to injure the patient because it'll increase, you know, patient falls and that kind of thing. But nobody has yet done a research project that shows that these lifting injuries among staff contribute to patient falls and other injuries among patients. I wouldn't be surprised if a study comes out in the next few years showing that. But so far, I couldn't find any. And the researchers I asked said, no, we don't know of any either.
Let me just read a couple more emails, and I want to go to more of the phone calls of listeners. Rick writes, "Even if you had big, strong men like football players who worked out with heavy weights daily, the positions of moving a 200-pound-plus patient from a bed would stress their bodies because they could not maintain proper form for the muscles that are involved." And yet another listener, Mike, says, "Nurses must make executive decisions to do things on the job that are against their training and work practices because they act in the moment. For the most part, procedures seem pretty thorough, so there must be problems caused by spontaneous moves. Hospice insists that you must have a hospital bed if bathing is part of a patient's care, so patients can be elevated, so the person moving the patient need not bend to lift, but it's not enough, I suppose." And just one more listener, Kim, who says, "I herniated a cervical disc while caring for a patient at Stanford in 1993 at a time when there were severe staffing cuts, not only making it dangerous for nurses, but for patients as well. I had surgery with titanium plates and a cadaver graft implanted in my spine. I've been in chronic pain ever since the injury and received no relief from the surgery, which I believe made the condition worse. Hospitals simply don't care about injuries to employees or patients, and good body mechanics mean nothing when you have to lift someone 2 to 3 times your size." Let me bring another caller on here. And Dennis, that's you. Good morning.
Good morning. I was an RN for 30 years. I incurred a career-ending back injury in 2009, stopped working in 2010. And it's my view that when and until the state and or the federal government gets involved in the business of holding hospitals accountable, not just for their patient care, but for the care of their staff, that this kind of thing will continue. And we need to put pressure if we're going to keep nurses at the bedside, because as many people have commented, nurses are getting older and younger people are not interested in this, and most especially when they begin to realize the physical damage that can occur from this kind of work. And thank you, and I'll take any comments off the air.
All right, thank you for that. Dennis, the fact of the matter is, Danny, you can actually reduce these injuries about 80% with the machines that we're talking about here?
Well, one of the hospital chains that I looked into, Baptist Health in Florida, they have 5 hospitals. They say They've reduced their injuries in the past 6 years or so by 80% by buying all kinds of machines and intensively training the staff to use them. The VA, the Department of Veterans Affairs, at all its hospitals across the country, they've reduced injuries on an average by 40%. Some have reduced them by much more, some by less, but it's an average of 40%. And some other hospitals around the country have reported similar results. The problem is, as I mentioned some time ago, everybody I talked to, including in the hospital industry, said that most hospitals have not taken aggressive steps to do this.
You're listening to Forum. We're talking to Daniel Zwerdling, who is correspondent for NPR's investigation unit. And once again, he led the investigation into nursing injuries in a series called Injured Nurses, which will air on All Things Considered every Wednesday this month. And this is a fundraising period for KQED Public Radio. For more information about how to support KQED, go to kqed.org. I'm Michael Krasny. And we'll go to another caller, and that's Linda in Martinez. Linda, welcome.
Hi, I'm a physical therapist. I work at the County Hospital for Contra Costa. A couple of things I haven't heard mentioned. One is most hospitals have physical therapy and occupational therapy professionals who get doctor's orders that involve getting up and moving around. And in a lot of settings, PTs and OTs do this work with little to no injury. The other thing is there's a very different level of training. PTs and OTs are trained to have the patient do as much as they can do for themselves, and then if they need help, they can get it. Nurses seem to be trained to treat patients like a sack of potatoes, and whether they're in a rush or if there's a staffing issue, you know, you're portraying all the lifting as if people were in comas. You know, many of these patients can at least do some or much of the movement on their own, and that would reduce some of the injuries. We do extensive training, but we don't do enough training. We should be doing a training once a month. We should be up on the floors shadowing nurses and giving them tips on moving of patients. But the PTs and OTs in most hospitals do quite a bit of the patient moving, at least during a day shift.
All right. Linda,
so I just wanted to make that point.
No, I appreciate your making that point. And Danny, you want to respond?
Well, I think it's a good point. Thanks, Linda. I was not able to get good statistics about injuries among physical therapists. I heard a lot of anecdotal evidence that they were getting injured too, but I just, you know, I don't have the facts to prove it or dispute it.
Well, let me thank Linda for her call. And another caller joins us. That's Rob. Rob, thank you for waiting. You're on the air. Good morning.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I was wondering, with all the advances in robotics these days, why aren't there many more, you know, specific medical robots that can help through most of this? I'm not saying it's going to take care of it 100%, but it would alleviate a lot of the strain for the other nurses if there's more robots included into the mix at the hospitals.
Yeah, what about robots, Danny?
You know, I'm sure that some of the manufacturers are working on that right now. In fact, if any of them are listening, please call. But it's a great idea, and people talked about it, but I didn't hear of anybody who's actively working on it. By the way, one thing that I did hear quite a bit, people in the hospital industry said, you know, you got to remember that a lot of patients don't want to be lifted by a machine. They want the caring, you know, personal touch of a human, you know, touching them. You know, I think that's an important point, except that at, for example, the VA hospital that I spent 2 days at, the patients I talked to said they really they felt safer, actually, with the lift. One man told me he felt like a baby being wrapped up in that cocoon that they, you know, hook on to the ceiling hoist that lifted him out of bed and across the room and into the wheelchair. He said he sort of felt like a baby being carried by a stork, and it was a very comforting feeling.
Well, it's ironic. Our guest in the next hour is Daniel Linden, a neuroscientist who says we need touch and how important touch is for healing and all that.
Well, you know, you can touch the patient when you put the machine or the cocoon around them. It's a sling. That's what the hospital folks would call it. But, you know, you can touch people, obviously. It doesn't mean that a robot's going to come in and you're never going to see a person.
I get a little pushback here from Peter, who writes, I'm sorry to say it, but honestly, many nurses don't look very fit. Speaking of first responders, if firefighters suffer from fewer injuries, perhaps it's because they have stringent fitness standards they must continue to meet.
Well, that's an important point. Many nursing staff, like many people across the country, are not very fit. So I guess the question is, do you blame the employee for getting injured, or, you know, because they're overweight and because they don't run? Actually, there's a big controversy developing in many companies. Many companies have started introducing employee wellness plans where they give bonuses to groups of employees that show that they're X percent fitter, you know, that they exercise X minutes more a day than the next group down the hallway. And they're controversial because while they sound like, hey, this is a, you know, good idea to have a company encourage their workforce to be fitter, in fact, it starts to pit one employee against employee, and it also starts to imply, many people say, that it is the employee's fault when they get injured because they weren't fit. You know, they didn't have six-pack abs and jog 5 miles a day. You know, it's a slippery slope once you start blaming people for getting hurt.
Daniel Swerdling, correspondent with the NPR Investigative Unit. Danny, good to have you on, and congratulations on real yeoman and important work. Appreciate your being with us.
Well, Michael, thanks so much, and thanks, everybody, for calling in.
And thank you, our listeners. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell and Irina Gucci. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai, with online support from David Marks. Senior editor is Dan Zoll. And you can continue this discussion online by going to kqed.org/forum and clicking on the segment. And as I said, we have another hour up ahead. It's with Daniel J. Linden, neuroscientist, who wrote a book on touch. For all of us here at KQED, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.